My Chops TV.
You will be chopped.
Know what that means? Licking my chops.
Today I will show you how to do a karate chop.
Simply saying, no, he doesn't have the chops to do what it takes.
New thing. I'm busting chops.
Welcome to Chops TV, featuring Jennifer Lopez. Now here's Chops.
Hey guys, Chops TV right here. Chops and J-Lo with you for another week. Before we get into what we watched this week, Jen, I wanted to start here because we were both culprits in the great popcorn disaster of 2024. We settled that we were going to go to the movie early. It was going to be great. We were just going to knock it out on a Saturday morning, 10:30 a.m. start time, and then boom, I drop the popcorn. And then I pick up the popcorn. And then I come back. And we're sitting back down, and then you drop the popcorn, and we have to pick up even more popcorn. I had to wash my hands twice.
The dropping of the popcorn is an epidemic.
It's really tough.
Our society, yeah.
I thought I could balance it on your legs, but you were wearing black leggings, and I couldn't see, I guess, clearly enough.
No, what you said was, I thought your legs were flat, and I said, what about me has ever been flat?
I've definitely balanced a popcorn tin on your legs at a movie before, then I've handed it over to you. Instead, these ones just rolled off.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
We needed what we had on, what was that, Tuesday, where we had the actual like tray around because we were in one of those eating ones for the AMCs. But
oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, we weren't at that. Another weird thing.
Sorry, go ahead.
It was a subtitled one. It must have been for like
you
deaf
dumbass.
People accessible.
You-
and I thought it was just 25% off because it was early.
Well, I thought, okay, he got matinee, right? It should be fine. I usually buy the tickets. It should be fine, right? I thought maybe the subtitle was like part of it just for a second. You know, I don't know, something playing on a screen and they put up subtitles. But then it kept going and about, I don't know, 7 minutes that I said, oh, this is a closed caption showing. Which is so funny because I have lately been liking watching shit at home with the closed captions, and you're like, take this shit off. This sucks.
Well, when I read every letter. You're a much better skimmer than I am. I read every word. So when you put subtitles on, I find myself reading more than watching, and I don't like that. So I made a point while watching this movie to make sure that I was actually watching it and not always just reading the subtitles, and I'm happy because it was really good. So we saw the Iron Claw on Saturday about the Von Erich wrestling family and possibly their curse or just everything. But it is gut-wrenching. It's a really, really good movie. I really did like it. But, man, is it gut-wrenching. And I would say there was only probably 10-ish people in the theater with us. I think every single person was crying by the end of the movie.
I heard some pretty inconspicuous sobbing right at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really gets you as all these brothers meet their end, and you feel for whether or not, is that a spoiler? I guess if you don't know anything, so spoilers for the Iron Claw. If you know anything about the Von Erich family, you would know this. So that's like, going in, that's kind of all I knew, is that I know that they die. A large number of them die, and it's tragic. And this family kind of falls apart from their wrestling stuff that they had really built up in Texas and were competing at the highest levels of it to professional wrestling, not like Greco-Roman wrestling for those who don't know.
They're just naked the whole movie.
But I didn't know much more of the story. So the whole time I'm sitting there like, when is somebody going to die? I was very nervous watching it. And then it starts to happen.
Yeah, sort of like dominoes on a Puerto Rican dining room table on Christmas Eve, they started falling.
It was, and yeah, so I was interested to go through it and see, okay, so like how close to the real story is, because something they do in this movie is they don't really make it a point to like for sure tell you what year it is. At the beginning, they tell you it's 1979. There's a few times where during their matches, like the title card will come up and that will have a year on it, but you really don't have an idea of how long of a stretch this was. So we get it starting in 1979 and the final brother to pass during this stretch, and Kevin Von Erich is still alive, so he has not died, but was Carrie due to a self-inflicted gunshot wound, and that happened in 1993. So about a 14-15 year period the movie covers. Interesting though, I was looking into it, so there is some thought that David Von Erich's death in Japan, that that could have been drug related, but the official story is the ruptured intestines, and that one happened in 1984. Then you have Mike's death in 1987, and that one goes about looking into the actual story. Yes, he had the shoulder surgery. He didn't go into the coma like right during the surgery. It was later, a complication from it made that fever spike and he goes into it. But the same thing, suffers some brain damage and eventually kills himself with a mixture of alcohol and sleeping pills. Then Kevin is the oldest brother. There is no older brother than Kevin in the real world.
Huh, okay. So
there is a Chris Von Erich who was the youngest one and he died just short of his 22nd birthday in September of 1991. Another suicide by gunshot for him. So that one, they change up the story a little bit because I guess four deaths like that would have just been a little too much.
Well, it would have seemed not realistic, right?
It would have been like, this is too Hollywood-y. Like, they had to tone down the stranger than fiction of it and actually tone it down a little bit. And then, as I mentioned, Carrie, the last one in 1993, same thing. He on the dad's ranch. It not the same thing where, like, the brother came up and found him. The dad actually found him in that one. But just incredibly tragic. And I'm not faulting the movie for changing some things around. Hollywood does that all the time. And I don't think they did that to any detriment to it. And on that note, I thought it was great. I really, really liked this movie. It's very, very sad, but I would highly recommend it to anybody, especially if you're into wrestling. But even if you're not, I think you can get into this and understand the human stuff about it. And they also do a really good job of laying out like what the world of wrestling is like, especially at that time when it was hitting its first like major apex. And then later on in the 90s, it did. So maybe it was kind of in the lead up to that, but right around there, 70s to 90s, late 70s and 90s, huge for professional wrestling. And they do a good job. I like that scene where he's talking to Lily James. Pam is the character who Kevin Von Erich ends up marrying. And he's explaining that, like, because she's like, well, isn't it all predetermined?
Yeah, isn't it just Spike? That's my accent.
Okay. And I like the way he explained it. Like, well, just like with any job, if you're performing and you're doing well, you're going to get a promotion. So when we get these belts, that's what it is. It is the promotion. And then I think the movie also did a really good job of, especially with Kevin, and then it helps you understand what's going on with his other brothers as time goes on, how physically grueling it is. Because, yeah, you might have a plan of what you're going to do in there, but you're still hitting the ropes. You're still hitting the floor of the ring. And in some instances, they hit this hard. He hit this hard. You're hitting the concrete floor around the ring, and it is tough on these bodies, and that's why steroids and painkillers are very popular in this profession.
Yeah. Overall, I would say I was very impressed with the movie. You were definitely on the we need to go see this train. So I boarded the train as well. But I was pleasantly surprised by it. All the performances are stellar. The movie, you don't feel the length of it, and it's not even that long, but you don't feel like you've been there for, what, 2 hours and 10 minutes?
Yeah, 132 minutes, so two hours and 12. No, it didn't feel that length, and as you're watching it, because you're sitting there, at least for me, like I said, like kind of anticipating, like, okay, when are these deaths going to start happening? But even once that starts, there wasn't like a point where I'm like, okay, now the movie can finish up, and because it's a little bit more open-ended in that way. At the very end, you finally know that they're wrapping it up, but you have no idea exactly like
when they're gonna,
what's going to be the last of this, and how is this movie going to end? How are they going to frame it there? And they frame it with the brothers meeting up in heaven too. And that's where everybody's lost.
Yeah, so
everybody's going to lose their eyeballs on that one.
I was proud of myself for keeping it together for as long as I did. I'm not like a big crier at movies, but if something is, you know, poignant enough, I will definitely shed a tear or two. And they all met up in heaven, and I was like, oh my God, this is the saddest thing I've ever seen. But as far as like recommending the movie to people who are wrestling fans, I was like, oh, my dad would probably really love this movie. And then, you know, the longer you sit with it, you're like, I don't know if I want to tell my dad to watch this movie because I know this is going to bum him out really, really bad. It's going to be so sad. I think, too, football fans, I think, deal with this all the time with, like, the concussion protocol and stuff. And is it safe? And, you know, if you've been a fan of the sport for so long, having the, you know, looking at what this does to people who are wrestlers,
mm-hmm.
And like the toll, the physical toll, the mental toll, like the family structure, the dynamic of it all, it's like sort of brutal.
Looking into it, there was like, there's like a Wikipedia page that's like famous wrestlers who died young.
Yeah.
Like that's a whole page because it happens so often and it's so tragic because it's just such a tough industry on these guys. And they last longer because it's, because you can fudge it a little bit and you plan some things out. They last longer than most normal athletes. So even once their body does start deteriorate, they can mask it and figure out ways. I mean, good example is Kerry Von Erich, because I was reading up on him. His amputated foot was a secret.
Yeah, that was crazy, huh?
People didn't know.
I was just reading an article the other day because I was trying to figure out the timeline of all the events.
Mm-hmm.
And it said that, he played like 6 months. He was wrestling and no one knew.
Yeah, and apparently Kevin Von Erich thinks that he probably could have saved the foot, but he tried. And they depict this a little bit in the movie, not that this is maybe a reason he loses the foot, but that he was pushing himself to come back too quickly from that motorcycle accident. And so he had the foot initially and maybe strained it too much. Either way, ends up without it, and he ends up being one of the brothers who takes his own life there. The wrestling, though, in the movie looked really good. I was very entertained by it.
It looks great,
The music is great along with it. If you cut the movie off once Tom Sawyer by Rush ends, if you just stop watching the movie there, you'd be like, that was a really fun wrestling movie. I'm happy for those brothers.
Slap it to bass.
But it doesn't end there. It keeps on going. The biggest thing for me, though, taking from this, and I was on it going in, and I don't know what has like changed me to being on the Zac Efron train, but I think he is a tremendous actor. I think he showed that he's got totally drama, like can win awards type chops with this movie. And also the physical transformation is nothing to scoff at, but I thought it was a really good one because it didn't go like straight biopic. It wasn't like, and here's where they invented this wrestling move that everybody knows. It didn't do that kind of stuff. So it didn't come off to me as just like, he's doing a great Kevin Von Erich impression. I think he did a good job of matching it physically as good as he can. He's 5'8". Kevin Von Erich was 6'2 or 6'3, so he couldn't match that. But muscle-wise, what he did to his chin, whether or not it was plastic surgery or prosthetics or however he got that done, that shows that he was ready for a role like this. But I did like that it didn't really look like he was just sitting there trying to be like, I sound the most like Kevin Von Erich, because that's sometimes that stuff like overshadows the performance. And it's but are you actually acting well, or are you just sounding like Elvis? Sorry to call you out, Austin Butler.
It's got everything to do with us.
The biker one with him looks kind of good.
Just give me.
Okay, clear your throat, and here we go.
It's got everything to do with us.
Whoa, is Elvis in the
Much
room
better.
Right now?
See, you're pretending, but I know for real. You might think it was Elvis. Anyway, truly impressive, the work that that Zac Efron put into this. The first scene where you see he's sleeping in bed and you see his muscles and like the veins in his shoulders and in his hands. And for a second, I was like, this is borderline grotesque how big this motherfucker got. He is huge in this movie.
No, and he's been muscly before. He was in really good shape for especially the first Neighbors movie. And then he was in that Baywatch movie with The Rock, but he never pushed it like this. Like, he is super pumped up in this, and the performance is really good to the point where I'm starting now. We looked through it. I don't know why I got on the Zac Efron kick. Maybe it's just because he's been around for so long, and I watched High School Musical when I was a kid.
You finally got your Stan Club membership card for Zac Efron. We got in the mail, and you were like, yeah.
Well, because we were looking at like his filmography, and it's like, no, nothing like stands out as like, oh, he jumped up with this performance, and that's why I was anticipating this. I don't know why. I just had a feeling, and I think he hit it out of the park here. And so I'm excited to see what he can do in the drama realm for the rest of his career as he kind of enters the more adult part of his career as he gets into his 30s and
everything. Really serious roles.
Mm-hmm.
And what a time to hit your stride, too, with that cast. Jeremy Allen White being as big as he is right now.
In popularity, not in stature.
Or in size. But according to Calvin Klein ads,
People are very excited about the Calvin Klein ads.
Oh, I think people are very excited. Not safe for work.
Can't wait for the Bear season 3.
Yeah, if you're listening at work, don't Google Jeremy Allen White Calvin Klein ad.
No, that's going to have to be on your phone.
For sure. In the bathroom at work.
Is that what you do? Is that what you did at work last week?
Hey, you're the one who tells me 10 minutes a day.
Okay, but yes, the performances across the board you enjoyed.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
I thought the dad was really good. He was played by what Holt McCallany, which is the older detective in the Mindhunter show, which we really love. That's a David Fincher show that never got to be finished on Netflix, but it's really good. It's got about, I think it's got 2 seasons, maybe 3. Mm-hmm. Might be a third in there, but it's at least 2 seasons, and it's really good. And he did a really good job in this one. And playing Fritz Von Erich, I think he found a way to thread that needle of showing that, no, this wasn't a loveless dad, that he didn't hate his children. He wasn't a spinning his mustache villain, but obviously had issues with how he was raising them, the pressure he was putting his kids under, possibly stealing money from them. They allude to a little bit. That would be more on just like straight up bad guy side as well. But he also had moments where he tells Kevin that, hey, you should hold on to this one. This is a good girl. And that's the woman he ends up marrying. He feels really proud for his kids when they do succeed in the ring as well. He's not just,
but he won't tell them.
No, he won't tell them that exactly that he's proud. He says more for like, their industry and building up their brands and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's not like specifically just for them. Biggest problem is you can't live your dreams through your kids.
Yeah. And it seems like he is a man who, you know how people soft parent now, or there's a term like soft parenting.
Yeah.
Not coddling your kids so much, but, you know, letting them make their own decisions. And you know, if they're having a temper tantrum, instead of yelling, like trying to, you know, communicate.
You get on their level and try to figure out what are these emotions that you're going through. Not in the Von Erich household.
This is not the parenting style of the Von Erich household, yes. Just a guy from a different time where it was, you had to really, you know, I hate this phrase, but raise yourself up by the bootstraps kind of dude, you know.
Well, they're going to the brother's funeral, and he's like, no sunglasses. We will not cry today. Men don't cry.
And in one vein, you're like, okay, like you're trying to teach your kids resilience and strength and, you know, showing like an outward appearance of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Just, like manhood and.
Yeah. Strength. Exuding this like strength, confidence. But it's all a facade.
Which is funny because that's kind of how wrestling is, at least to the outside looking in. Like I said, it is physically taxing.
Yeah. And Kevin sees the way that he treats his brothers and then sort of like takes on this protector role, which, you know, Pam very astutely clocks like his on their first date.
Older brother syndrome.
Yeah. Older brother syndrome. And it sort of then puts him in this weird place where like Kevin wants to make his dad proud, but also understands that like the kind of work that he's putting them through is very taxing on them mentally and physically. And, you know, then that spirals into guilt when he thinks that he can't save Mike when he should have stepped in.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was trying to step in. He was like, yeah, you know, dad's going way too hard on him. Like you need to say something. And the mom is also sort of hands off in that regard too. So it's not just the dad here. And usually you'll have like, you know, your motherly instinct to then go fall back on for comfort. So there's no even source of comfort there. So then when he's trying to make his whole family, the only way that he can show that he cares about them is to then isolate himself from his family because he doesn't want this curse to rub off on them. And him staying away is like showing how much they mean to him, where it's so fucked, honestly, the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's really, really, really sad.
Like psychologically, those kids had been put through the ringer and their brain was just all jumbled up and they couldn't keep things straight and figure out like what was best for them. And so a number of them found that taking their own life was the easiest way to get rid of that.
But even the emotional intelligence that then Kevin's children show him when he is having a moment missing his brothers is just like light years beyond even what like he was experiencing probably around that age too. So it's just like this generational trauma that then carries over and then somehow you have to break the cycle. And I think like you can't have this, I mean, you can have this like really, really tragic movie and ending, but it just like lifts the end of the film up when like you see that Kevin and Pam were together or have been together for 40 years and have this huge, beautiful family.
One of in that picture they put up, one of the guys is like throwing a baby into the air. The baby is midair as they took the picture, and he got that dream of. That's what he told Pam on their first date, at least in the movie, that he just wants to buy a big ranch and just have all his brothers come over and live with them. And so
sometimes
unfortunately he didn't get that with his brothers, but he's been able to cultivate that with his family that he has created now.
Sometimes you don't get to become the world heavyweight wrestling champion, you know?
Sometimes you don't.
Sometimes you just buy a ranch and your whole family lives there, and that's just as great, if not better.
You brought up the mom played by Maura Tierney, who we do not see very often anymore. But eventually I was like, yeah, that's definitely her. And then we saw in the credits that it was. But she also gets bulldozed by Fritz at a certain point. And I think that's what that opening scene is about, that she is giving him some, hey, we can't afford this. Why did you buy a Cadillac? What's going on? And he gives his reason. And she basically, I think that's kind of like a turning point for her character, at least, that she resigns herself to say that, like, what he wants, he's going to do, and there's nothing I can do to stop it, and I'll just be here along for the ride.
Well, it's clearly a turning point for Kevin also in that sense, because he hears what his father is saying to his mother, and he's like, as long as we have all these things, we will be successful.
Yeah, they have to be the best, the most successful. Whatever it was, there were three of them that like he was specifically saying, but they were all kind of along those lines. And you're right, that does stick with him as a kid, and he says that's what we've got to do, and that's why.
And then he almost feels like lied to too. Like you said all these things, like I did exactly what you told me to, and you overlooked me, you passed me by
twice. He set up one of his younger brothers to then be the guy to take over and go challenge for the heavyweight title because. Basically because they were better on the mic, especially with David, that was why.
Yeah.
At least then, how the movie depicted it.
And then once he like assumes control of the company, because the dad retires, then tries to undermine him when he's trying to sell that.
He tries to intimidate the guy, yeah.
Yeah, he tries to intimidate him from not selling and ostracize him even more from this already broken family. Like, imagine telling your kid, like, all three of the brothers are dead. And he says, if you sell this company, you're not walking into this house again.
It's pretty wild. And actually, in real life, it's all four brothers. And even in the movie, it's all four brothers. Yeah. But you didn't realize that it was all a string because of how their wrestling careers had taken them. And obviously, their upbringing as well. It's, yeah, I mean, so tragic for Kevin Von Erich. And I wouldn't have blamed him for wanting to get out of the business, but they leave that little kernel because it's not about the wrestling. They do very little of like playing up like here are his main rivals, and there are a few in the heavyweight fights. You get a Ric Flair impression from a guy who tough task. I think he did a good job, but there's only one Ric Flair. But it's not about that. It's not about this league. It's really about this Von Erich family. But when he sells it, the guy says to him, like, hey, if you need some work, we could use you in the ring. And I would not have faulted Kevin Von Erich for getting out of it, but that's what he knew how to do. He continued to wrestle into his career, into the early 2000s, and then even made, like, a very late appearance in the ring in 2017.
Wow.
Even. So it has not been that long. Now, that was, like, a guy coming out of retirement for, like, one match type thing. But still, in the ring at that age, that was both impressive and also just, like, oh, man, how hard would it be to continue to get in the ring after going through all this?
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
No. And again, I really like the movie. I think it did a great job of show, not tell in it. I liked that the deaths and even the motorcycle accident for Carrie weren't graphic. They didn't actually really show that. The closest we got to like something being like graphic of explicit of what is happening is they do show Mike taking the pills, but then they kind of show him wandering off and going to die all alone on the family's land somehow. You don't see the motorcycle accident. You don't see anything in Japan with David. You just get him throwing
another
up.
Another impressive performance too, though.
Yes, you get him throwing up at the wedding and Kevin being like, hey, are you okay? Should you get this checked out? And he just keeps pushing because, oh, Dad says if I do this and do this and I can get there. And so that's when, that just that tragic part where it feels like all of these are also like savable, and that's why Kevin takes it so hard, is because he's never able to to be the savior for them. And all he wants to do is hang out with his brothers at the swimming hole.
Yeah, that looked sick too.
Did look like fun.
You know what I found interesting? How emotionally affected you were by this movie. You haven't been able to stop talking about it and making, you know, very astute observations about the parallels between, you know, wrestling and, you know, the father and, you know, the iron claw grip that he had on the family. Mm-hmm. And that was his famous move and stuff. But then all weekend you were trying to do the iron claw to me, trying to perfect it and asking, does it hurt?
I don't know.
It hurt yet? No, see, it's all in the thumb and then these two fingers. And then you find the pressure points.
It's a pressure thing on your temples, I believe. I did not look this up. This is just by looking at it and how they used it.
So
did I ever get any good at it?
Oh, a couple times when I said, yeah, you're good. He was like, okay, but what if I could do it better? And then you kept squeezing. I said, please stop iron clawing me.
I became like the older brother wanting to do wrestling moves on his little brother. You're my wife.
Dude, you legit put my head in a headlock and gave me a noogie.
I did do that. That's true.
So I don't know.
I guess I just got a little hyped up from the movie. Because again, the wrestling scenes are good.
Yeah, they are. They're very good. Very well done movie. Great movie. Definitely one of the best. Top five of 2023, in my opinion. It's going to be a little bit hard to beat out like the fan faves, but this one, I mean, it's hitting at the right time. I think it might just be a little bit too late to get awards recognition, but fantastic movie nonetheless. People should watch it and not let it fall by the wayside.
Yeah, the cast is really good, but another thing that might hold it back in like an awards ceremony type way is the director. He wrote and directed it. The Sean Durkin guy. He's got a couple of other ones. The Nest, Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. I don't know either of those movies off the top of my head. And so that you don't have a big name to like a Christopher Nolan to attach to it. But I said this leaving the movie. My like betting favorite to win Best Picture is still Oppenheimer. There's just a lot of factors to that movie that makes it a super easy, popular pick for Best Picture based on how the Academy normally gives it out. But even a few days later, I think I'm still on this. I think Iron Claw is my favorite movie of the year. It just, I felt more attached to it and it moved me to tears. It got me. And I liked also that it was definitely artsy. There were some really cool camera angles and the way they depicted the ring and all that stuff, but it wasn't fartsy. It didn't insist upon itself, which we did not get through this movie, but we watched like 30 minutes of Maestro and
it was more than that. We got like an hour into it.
Yeah, but I would say we gave up about 30 minutes. It played for a little bit longer until we finally were like, we're done. We're not watching this. But that movie just to me just felt like, look at how Oscar this movie is. And again, that's a straight up, I'm trying to do the best impression. And I'm like, I don't really care what Leonard Bernstein sounded like. Is the acting good? And that movie was just bogged down in too much. I did not finish it, so maybe it's better if you get all the way through it. But the Iron Claw, much better in that sense than some of these other movies that we see that come through that get all these accolades through award time, which we're right in the middle of.
Yeah, I think Bradley Cooper has become public enemy number one on Twitter, mainly because out of all the Oscar movies nominated, well, soon to be nominated movies in contention, this feels the most Oscar baity. And I think people are starting to feel like, you know, there would be one or two, you know, potentially even three late in December that would come out. It's like Oscar bait, and people are just like, oh, those are the Oscar bait movies, and be okay with it. Now there seems to be like a sense of, if it's disingenuine, we don't want it. So this one seems a little bit more like disingenuously Oscar baity than the other ones have been, and I think that's why
it feels like a checklist. Like, here are the things that win Oscars. Let's make sure we get all of those.
But I mean, Oppenheimer could easily be Oscar baity too. The problem is it's definitely artsy and it executes its vision so well that it's hard to, like, there was something to say with this. I don't know what Maestro is trying to say.
No, and we'll get to the end of it and figure that out maybe someday.
Maybe someday.
Hopefully. We'll see. If we watch it an hour at a time, it'll only take us one more shot to get all the way through it. But I would, even though it was a tough watch, it's not a tough watch in the like, I think I only need to see that movie once in my life. It's just a tough watch in that it's going to make you sad to watch The Iron Claw. But I would totally watch it again. If it comes out on streaming and we're like at my parents' house or something, I would be like, hey, do you guys want to watch this movie?
Yeah, I would totally watch it again and stop right after the wedding.
just yeah, it was all happy from there on out, just so you guys know. We also watched, now this one we thought we were going to be able to watch last weekend, and I watched an entire trailer and be like, why are they just showing the whole full-length trailer before this? Because I clicked on it and hit watch trailer because the movie wasn't out yet. But it was out this week, and it's Jake Johnson's directorial debut. If you don't know the name Jake Johnson off the top of your head, Nick Miller from New Girl. That actor. So he wrote and directed.
Give you cookie, man.
Exactly. He wrote and directed a movie called Self-Reliance that was also produced with the Lonely Island guys. And so Andy Samberg has a cameo in it. And I guess spoilers for it, because it's you know, it is kind of one of those high concept movies of a down on his luck guy gets put into a we're going to hunt you for money reality internet game show, essentially. But they went a different direction than you might think. That it's not about, it's not like Squid Game where it's like actually about the production and stuff. There is an air of, is this even actually happening, or is this guy going through like a psychotic break and his family doesn't believe him? But you do have the knowledge that like it does appear to be happening, but they could easily pull that on you. So you're kind of going through it the whole time. And so it becomes this comedy thriller at the same time.
Yeah, it's a great genre title for it, comedy thriller.
And I think comedy thriller is a lot better than action comedy, because a lot of the stuff that the character goes through in a thriller movie only has to kind of change the tone or the way the main character is acting towards these things happening around him to make that scene comedic or satirical.
Yeah.
Of those kind of movies. The problem with action comedy is when the action picks up, it's not funny anymore, and it's just a big action movie, which is fine, but it's usually not the best action movie, so what are we really watching here? And this has already been done. I'm thinking of, like, people have recut trailers like to Elf or Dumb and Dumber to make them thrillers.
Or Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, because it's not that hard to just tilt it a little bit, and in this one they just said, well, what if the movie The Game, that's a David Fincher one as well, with Michael Douglas, what if we just took that and just kind of made it funny? In that one, Michael Douglas's character gets a birthday present from his kind of eccentric brother, played by Sean Penn, and it puts him into this whole like mystery of like these people are coming after him, and he goes to the company that it is, and it turns out it's like a shadow company and all this stuff, until I'll ruin the game. It's like 30 years old. He goes to his birthday party, and it all leads him to a surprise birthday party, but by that point he gets a gun and he shoots his brother, Sean Penn.
Oh.
And then he decides that it was too much, and he jumps off the building, lands on a big inflatable thing, and that was even the shot, even shooting his brother was a part of the game, and now it's really his birthday party. It's a really good movie.
How old was he turning?
It was a kind of a momentous one. I think it was supposed to be like 50 or something like that.
Oh, that's awful. Why would you do that to someone?
You don't think it's a good birthday present?
No.
Before we get in more to Self-Reliance as well, would you do it if this happened to you? If Andy Samberg came up to you on the road in a limo and said, hey, you're nobody, for $1 million, you can do this. And would you actually go and go back in there and say, sure, what are they? They're like Swedish or Greenland or something
that.
And he's like, I'll do it. I would think I would say no. I would.
Yeah, that's a big no for me.
It sounds like a scam, too. Like, yeah. I don't even believe if I make it that you're going to give me $1 million.
Even if Andy Samberg was in the car, he's still a stranger. And that's, like, the first rule of, like, being outside. It's, like, don't talk to strangers and don't get into unmarked vehicles.
One thing when this movie, when we saw the trailer and everything, I was worried that it was going to be similar to Charlie Day's Fool's Paradise, which I thought was an okay movie, but it's not very good. And it clearly had that, like, oh, this guy's been around Hollywood for a while. He's finally writing and directing his own movie. And he calls up a lot of his friends that he's made. And here's a little part for you. Here's a part for you. And it was a bunch of little roles for noticeable names. And that's what this was, too, as far as just actual notable people in these roles. I mean, the big basketball player, Bogdanovich or whatever, he was, I don't think,
chokes him the hell out against like some building.
Yeah. And so he's that's it. That's all for his character in the Beat It jacket, not the Thriller jacket, which somebody astutely points out. And that's when you also start questioning, like, oh, is this all in his head? Because it only happens when he is alone, which makes sense. So he has to be with somebody the entire time. That's the conceit of the movie. He's got 30 days to survive as these people are trying to hunt down and kill him, and it's being filmed for an internet TV show. And so his way around that is, well, if I'm always right next to somebody, then I'll be okay. So then the only moments you get where he is dealing with the actual things going on with the show are when he's alone. And so you're wondering, man, is he just crazy? Are we being fooled as the audience as well?
Well, he very smartly, almost immediately, finds a homeless guy because he's like, you know, when the people are explaining the rules to him or this loophole to him, which is what makes him say yes, he's like, this is going to, he's just like, no, it's not going to be as easy as you think having someone with you 24/7. So he finds a homeless guy who, for all intents and purposes, has nothing else better to do than to comb through his trash. He's like, hey, you want to make some money? Just like come be my friend. And for just, like a month.
And just starts calling him James.
Yeah, and then just starts calling him James. And he goes like, yeah, okay. He was like, my name's actually Walter. He's like, then why'd you tell me your name was James? He goes, I never told you what my name was. You just started calling me James. Which is so sad because then towards the end, he, you know, gets kicked out of the house. He meets up with the woman and they were together for a while. But then it gets too much for her. So he's out on his own again. And he loses James because the people come and take James because it was getting kind of boring for
him to, basically he's just in like a tent city homeless encampment for the last like 5 days of the 30 days.
Yeah. So just like, I don't know, maybe a commentary also on how like it easy it is to overlook homeless people. And, you know, he just blends in with them and everyone's like super nice and welcoming. He's like, hey, I'm just gonna hang out with you for a while. And it seems like he's also on the edge of like his sanity too at the end of the,
but you're right, yeah, when he's with all the homeless people, it never becomes a threat that he's there or anything. It's still the threat of these people trying to hunt him down, and then the ninjas who are like hidden who are kind of helping him throughout. And whenever they come out, you notice that he whispers into like a, you know, what would be, I don't know, some sort of wrist communicator, but the actor doesn't actually say anything. Instead of whispering, I think he just moves his mouth and pretends to be whispering, and then they all like do like a little acrobatic like somersault or cartwheel out of where they're hiding.
And it was like intimidating and scary for him at first, but he's like, okay, I know you guys are here, just like come out, it's okay. And then they all sort of just like fall out from different places around, and it's really good. It was funny. I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah, Anna Kendrick is also in it. She kind of plays his love interest, and they have a little bit of a falling out. With the movie, because it's produced by Lonely Island, it gave me really, like tonally, it reminded me so much of Palm Springs, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. That movie ended, and I remember exactly what I said. I go, that was delightful.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's nice to just watch a little movie that makes you smile. I laughed out loud a few times, but it wasn't like gut-wrenching laugh, but it was entertaining. I actually think, and usually I'm somebody who pushes for, hey, we don't need to make every movie 2.5 hours long, but it's only 90 minutes. And I think there was some stuff that they left on the table. I think that they could have explored the other people playing the game a little bit more. And maybe this is something they wanted to avoid, but we got really no idea of what it looks like on the viewer end.
Yeah.
And part of that is the mystery of, does this really exist? But I kind of would have liked to see some of that to see like, okay, so what actually is this, show? And they had time to play with being only 90 minutes right now.
We've sort of seen that though with Squid Game in particular. Like we get to see like the disgusting, deplorable billionaire people, like awfully just disgusting humans. Who are being like fed this content and like paying, you know, crazy VIP fees to like get this content or whatever. This like debaucherous exclusive murder show.
Yeah.
So I don't think we really need to see them because we know what those people are like. They're just like archetypes onto themselves now.
Yeah. Could there have been more run-ins with the people trying to kill him?
Yeah, probably.
Like, the only real one we get with his character, Tommy, is the Ellen DeGeneres one that knocks his tooth out.
But the only reason why I might disagree with you is because the more that we see the actual hunters, the less we're convinced that he could be just making it up. So, like, because we don't see the hunters as much as we probably would in a different movie, the whole time you're like, he still could be making this up.
Yeah, I would agree with you there that there are real reasons for keeping it a little more veiled. I just think that they could have farmed more and had a little bit longer of a movie.
I like the length of it.
I think it is perfect for a little streamer. Yeah. Whenever I'm looking at a movie and I'm like, oh, I'd be kind of interested in it, and I do see the 90 minutes, I'm like, okay, what
perfect
am I really going to lose?
Too.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they're finding, I think, they're hitting more of a stride of what belongs on streaming and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
This belongs on streaming.
And also that idea of, like, should it be a TV show? Should it be a movie? This one definitely was correct to be a movie. Do you think Jake Johnson was just playing a version of Nick Miller in this?
I don't think so.
No? I got that feeling a little bit. It's
maybe
good character.
When he starts to get, like, more flamboyant and like when he starts
the way
to
he talks
yell,
to his family.
Yeah, when he talks to the family. But Nick Miller is a very distinct breed of man. Where he's just dumb, or not dumb. He's just like not self-aware enough to realize how much of an idiot he really is, which is charming. This is not charming. His character was just like in a rut, you know, like down on the dumps, like just a depressing guy.
And you know, too, if you go ahead and look at this character, if you were from the other side or if it was presented from the other side, that you wouldn't believe this guy. You'd be like, yeah, he's crazy. This is comes in here and he says, oh, these foreign guys told me that people are hunting me down. They might not ever even get here, but I do need to be by somebody so that they can't kill me if I'm alone. Then they'll try to kill me. And if I make it 30 days, they'll give me $1 million. And his whole family rightfully is like,
yeah. And the perspective of the family, like he's already living with his mother. On the condition that he can keep a job. So, like, from the perspective of the family, it's like, of course we don't believe you.
Yeah, you've been somebody who's been dealing with this kind of stuff for a while.
The eldest sister is like, Mom, just tell him no. Kick him out. This is ridiculous.
She brings up remember when you were a kid and you made us call you Michael Jackson for a year because you liked him so much? He's like, this is totally different.
But it pays off in the end because... not only has he been telling the truth the whole time, but Wayne Brady ends up coming over to the family's house.
That's when they totally don't believe him. They're like, what do you mean Wayne Brady came here? What do you mean you saw Dad? Wayne Brady came to Dad's door, and he made him fly out here. Apparently he's living in Cleveland, and I met him in a limo last night. Every detail does sound ridiculous. Yeah. I do like it when, I don't know if they were running out of money or whatever, but he comments on, well, why not a limo? It's just a town car for the Ellen DeGeneres impersonator. Maybe I like a town car. We're not arguing about cars.
Yeah. Funny movie. Good quips. Good cast. Anna Kendrick was good in it. Sometimes, I don't know, lately with Anna Kendrick, the projects that she picks, I'm kind of like, you're better than that. Like, you were in, like, Up in the Air. Do more shit like that. This felt more in that vein.
Yeah, I mean, she's a pretty big star. You'd think she'd be able to command something like that. But the only other thing I remember from her somewhat recently, this is like 3 years old now, is that Noelle Disney Plus Christmas movie, which was fine. It was a fine little Christmas movie, but it's not anything that's going to, like everybody's like, oh, we got to watch that every year. That's a new classic from it. So, yeah, I think she could get a little bit more involved. But again, there's tons of names in this. So it's Boban. Is not Bogdanovich, that's a different NBA player, but Boban is, he's just listed as 7 foot man. And then get this, James/Walter, who also plays Detective Crashmore as Santa Claus, or Santa Claus as Detective Crashmore in that I Think You Should Leave sketch, right? That man's real name is Biff Whiff.
Biff Whiff. Hell yeah, it is.
That's tremendous. As we were talking about Jake Johnson's character, Tommy, in this movie and how presenting to the family and it comes off as crazy and they kind of don't know what to do and they try to hold an intervention for him. But this movie is silly. It did remind me of a part in The Iron Claw where they're back for Christmas. And Carrie, he gets the gun and he's like freaking out and he's got the girl with him and she's asking for a drink and he's like, oh, I just need to recharge. We got this really great deal on a flight down to Mexico. And then they reveal later that he didn't really do that. That girl wasn't important to him. And that kind of stuff, especially for the character Kevin in that movie. But even again, the family in here, that's really tough stuff to see. And while they're two different sides of how you're supposed to react to it, both movies hit those scenes from like a family standpoint, I think, pretty well.
Interesting. One thought that I did have about Iron Claw that I didn't say earlier. How many times does one of your kids have to commit suicide with a gun from the house?
Before you lock those things up?
Yeah. Before you just like maybe not have guns in the house. I don't know. Was three? Was two too many? I think
They had that whole case of guns. And in the case, at least, of the movie, Carrie kills himself with the gun he gifted to the dad.
That's kind of hardcore, actually.
It's a very tragic movie. Self-Reliance, though, spoiler alert, he wins.
And yeah, he does.
He's only going to get $4,000 for the next 250 months, which is not a bad deal, but it's not quite the same as the getting $1 million. Rate,
yeah, because it's like Swedish money or whatever.
And then, yeah, who knows what the actual conversion rate is going to be on it. But he would have to work
for a little bit. He could definitely stretch that out, make it last, figure out what he really wants to do in life.
Yeah, I mean, you just stack up a few $4,000 months and you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's still coming in. But it's the idea of do you want the annuity or the lump sum when you win the lottery? You want the lump sum because you can do a lot more with a large amount of money rather than an annuity where you're getting paid out every month, which just kind of turns into a salary. A nice salary. I'd love $4,000
a month. So what would your strategy be to win this? Would it be the same thing? Get a person to be with you 24/7 or...
What would be my strategy? I mean, that seems to be the only real way to do it. That's why I wish we got a little bit more with the other character he meets up with who says he's also playing the game and explains to him, like, I figured out what this is. And it's almost like a dinner for schmucks situation that they get people who are intentionally down on their luck and don't have much going on for them. But because it's more fun to laugh at that person running around trying to save themselves and that's so they're more making fun of them than it really is about like the hunting. It's not quite like Most Dangerous Game type situation because even the assassins are jokes too. One is dressed up like Sinbad. I mentioned the Ellen DeGeneres one. There's a sumo wrestler.
Yeah,
there's
it's
a
like
samurai
to him.
Yeah, it's also a 7-foot man in a Michael Jackson jacket.
Yeah,
very specific to him.
I wonder if like you could be on live, just like do a live stream for like 30 days.
Just that do counts. That in general?
Yeah.
Yeah. How would you, like, you just have to be close to the person. Would you do some sort of blindfold and headphones while they were going to the bathroom or while they were in the shower and just kind of turn your back to it? Or that's obviously the hardest part. And they get into that. He pulls his brother-in-law off the toilet in one scene to be like, no, there is somebody out there.
Yeah. I mean, just because of Kitty, we already have an open door policy in the house, so...
Do you think you could get through the 30 days or what would be your strategy?
No, I would go insane. I need my alone time. So like the thought of having not just you, literally anybody with me for every second of every day for 30 days would drive myself off a building.
I don't know. I do really like the idea of having an excuse to be like, you have to be around me for 30 days. You can't go anywhere.
Yeah, you would like that excuse.
I like spending time with you. Is that so bad?
I guess not.
I like spending time with Self-Reliance as well. It's on Hulu right now if anybody wants to go out there and get it. As always, you can find us on TikTok and Twitter at @_ChopsTV for both of those. One more thing. While we're on the topic of Jake Johnson, because he's a voice actor in this, we watched the Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse. Liked Into the Spider-Verse a lot. It's obviously, it's beautiful. You know, everybody has to say this, how great the animation style is. And it is. It looks really cool, and it's a lot of fun. But about halfway through the movie, you realize, okay, this is not exactly what they advertise, where it's like the whole team of all the Spider-Men from different universes, and they're all teaming up, and they go and they do things together, and you finally get to that. But the movie's been on so long that I was like, how do they really wrap all this up? And you were probably on it faster than me. Sorry, you can't just make a whole movie be a middle part of a to-be-continued. It's just the first half of a movie.
Yeah, you were like, oh, no. We're not getting to the end. I'm like, no, this is like the end. He's like, well, how are they going to end it? I was like, they're not going to end it. It's just going to become like a to be continued.
They didn't hit us with a part one in the title.
No.
I do not think this was properly.
No.
If I had paid and gone to see it in theaters, I kind of would have been pissed off.
Well, I can't believe that they didn't hit that more. Like when the theatrical run was happening, I can't believe more people weren't pissed that it wasn't a part one.
Yeah, like, and we were not told this. I mean, I don't know. Maybe some people read up on it and knew.
Like,
but
the week before Dune came out, maybe a week and a half before Dune came out, they they were doing the media circuit or whatever and were like hitting it hard. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a part one and the story will be continued in a part two if we get to make a part two. So they had to like preface it because I think people would have been really angry investing a lot of time in that and not having a fully realized conclusion. It's a little bit misleading, honestly.
They do not advertise the first half of the movie. And from what I remember from the marketing materials for this, obviously this movie came out a few months ago.
Yeah, and they spend a lot. Honestly, I was concerned with how much time they spent in the beginning with Gwen, like setting up her whole story. And then they hit the title cards.
It was like 15 minutes. It felt like it was a long time
to get it. Even when you get into Miles' story, it takes a little bit of time to like build up that speed and hit his conflict with his father and stuff. So,
funny, it goes back to, did they want to make a TV show? Is that what they're going for here? More episodes?
I don't know, man. I don't know. But the polka dot was funny though. The polka dot guy.
Yeah, he obviously became very powerful. I'm interested. Like, it got me. I do want to see how the story ends. So yeah. I guess mission accomplished. But I did feel a little cheated when all of a sudden we were like, oh, it's really going to be a to be continued. Like, to the point where no conflict was really resolved at the end of this movie.
Right.
And it's here's going to be
multiple strings, multiple threads out there.
Yeah. So I'm still, I guess I'm looking forward for it, but that was just something that stood out to me of stuff we watched this week. So now we're going to close up shop here. I'm going to go practice the Iron Claw on Jen some more.
No, you do it so good. You don't need to practice.
Oh, the pressure. I got the pressure now.
Yeah, you got it.
All right.
Please don't come near me with that claw.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Chops TV is made possible by people who subscribe to podcasts and viewers like you.